Nice to see you.
Just got enough people. I think I'm gonna sit back here.
Yeah, we need a.
Well, we have more chairs.
We have more chairs.
Here's 40. Where are the lights right up here?
And as I told
David the other day, don't bring anything smelly into here. You don't want anything close to our house. We don't smell it. We can see it, but we don't smell it.
Thanks, Kate.
And there you go.
Can you nail the bad guys?
I'm to the side, so I do get to go over that way a little bit sometimes.
Everybody know everybody? I think everybody met.
Everybody met Connie?
Connie.
Yeah.
Everybody know Connie? Connie. Well, welcome to all of you. We certainly appreciate you coming and sharing this time with us. We're very excited about our project. And we're calling for your expertise. And the guys from Kleiner's have been very, very important to us and have moved the project along rather nicely so far. And with that, I'm going to turn to Chris. He's been the point man on this, and maybe he has some things he'd like to say before we turn it over to you guys.
Well, basically, we just thought at this point in time, this is, like you guys know, this is a part of a grant that we got to do this project through the Dayton Development Coalition, $250,000 grant, and we had a very short period of time to try to get this accomplished. This all has to be done by the 1st of March. So, this is a project that was initiated back in 2005. Some work was done by some other firms, and a job-ready site application was put in. We've kind of revitalized this, and we're moving along at a pretty fast pace. And with our current short time frame that we had to deal with, we felt that it was time to get a few people involved, and we met this morning. Brought Jim Lefwich in from Dayton Development Coalition to get his input. So what we wanted to do now is meet with you folks and get your input. We'll let Jay and David from Kleiner's kind of go over the project where we're currently at, and then we would welcome any input from you folks as far as anything you see that we need to be doing or anything that we need to do to enhance the, obviously, funding and things down the future to get this off dead center. But we appreciate you guys coming out today and sitting down with us. So this time I'll turn it over to David and Jay and let them kind of go through the project.
Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner, I'm sure you don't remember me. I actually met you at a quarter 75 event held by Vandekar.
Yes, by Vandekar. Yes, I think I have a picture of you in it.
Okay. you know, we've got, as you probably know from that development, quite a bit of experience in working with industrial parks and vacant land sites and how bringing them to development, basically. And so whenever we were called by Preble County about this was a very exciting project for us to get involved with because we thought it was pretty much right up our alley to help them out with. You know, we've been working here with them on this southwest quadrant of 70 and 127, trying to figure out how do we bring all the infrastructure and utilities to the site in order to make it developable and also do all the due diligence studies necessary. So the developer can be, you know, more or less assured that whatever ground they're going to buy potentially is okay. You know, there aren't environmental nasties or anything like that. So we've been working with them. We've developed some master planning here with them, kind of as the first thing. Been looking at it, and as you can see, we've been looking at it as a commercial site, as a potential for a research office park up here in this quadrant, because there was some interest from Miami University. That's actually the same thing as what you
It's a packet.
Is that what I have here?
That's what you have.
Oh, you got it. Okay.
Yeah. I had two copies.
Okay.
Harold
Eugene.
There was some interest by Miami University in the past on the branch campus up here.
Has that waned? Is there any indication that they continue to be interested?
We just made contact with, left a message just a week ago with Miami to see and ask that question.
Okay, basically. So they expressed interest, and so far you don't know if they are even more interested or less interested than the last time.
Correct. As of today.
Correct. Yeah.
Technically, it wasn't a branch campus. It was a research tech park.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
And tell me if you could, sort of what the market play here is from a land use planning standpoint. I mean, is this a mixed use? If it's a mixed use, what uses, what's the anticipation in terms of the market absorption given the uses?
Currently what we're looking at is big bulk industrial distribution. For the bulk of the site, bulk majority of the site. You know, there's roughly 300 acres actually on the southwest quadrant between Monroe Central and State Route 127. When you're looking at master planning for this, it frankly eliminates a lot of the uses just because of the sheer size of the site. We think that commercial retail is appropriate up here at 127 and Orphans, and then your big bulk distribution would be back here, kind of off the road a little bit. Really the market's going to dictate what all this becomes, but just trying to decide.
From a master planning standpoint, I told the folks earlier this morning that there was some thinking going into this, why we put this road over here. We wanted to open up our four different market sectors that we think, as shown on the plan. Again, it's going to fluctuate with the market, but if we can get our phase one infrastructure in up to about here, this roundabout, we'll open up the commercial retail. This is flex space, some of your smaller stuff, the big box. And then, again, a little farther out there, but if there is need for Class A office or, tech space, we've got that up there. So we want to be able to simultaneously in phase one offer really pseudo market the four separate land uses. Taking a step further, one of the things we're going to be doing is drafting a overlay district to go over this roughly 200 acres like this. That's going to spell out things like design guidelines, specific permitted uses, conditional uses. It'll look like a PUD without being a PUD because we're sensitive to the fact that as soon as you say PUD, some developers get really scared. So we want to retain as much leverage on the county side as possible you know, while not, you know, scaring the market. So we're going to be working on that simultaneously. We're going to be doing your typical stuff of, at least we've suggested to the commissioners, of putting a TIF, just a blanket TIF agreement on there, with the clause in there that the clock doesn't start ticking until the first development goes in, so we can preserve our 30 years as it goes down. We'll do a CRA district, you know, and we want to have as much in place, you know, shovel ready, including all these districts and zoning, et cetera, you know, as soon as that phase one infrastructure is able to get in there. And so, just, you know, one more thing from a market play, you know, Dave talked about the City of Monroe, the Vandekar site, Quarter 75. I was at the city for about 11 years. I think I met you a couple times there when I was there. But, you know, I worked on that closely on the city side, actually, before I came here even. And I see it as being somewhat similar. If you're involved with that, you know, and you heard Rob Smigenis preach on that, yeah, a lot of it is actually coming true with the Home Depot actually going up out of the ground. So as I was telling everybody this morning, at least from my perspective, I would see this as being somewhat of a premier, you know, commerce center. Why is that? Well, I mean, I'm not aware of all that many, you know, 200 acre tracks that are on the, you know, the full quadrant of an interchange. Okay. The other thing, I think, from a differentiator standpoint, is that one of the discussions we're having with the commission in terms of, hey, how does this thing really develop out? You know, what's the strategy? You know, do you flip this out to sub-developers and do it that way? Or do you do your typical county CIC and really play developer yourself? And again, that's going to be their call early on. Again, it's probably going to be our suggestion for a lot of reasons that they go to the county-owned industrial park. You know, the advantages are obvious. I mean, you know, we can get under there, you know, similar to the Clayton deal, you know, for Caterpillar, at really beat competition in-state and out-of-state on land price alone. You know, so I mean, I think that's what kind of one of the things that makes this really exciting and unique versus what's out there today. I mean, you've got your Claytons and some of your other municipal-owned deals, but right on, you know, the interstate like this, you know, versus 5, 10, 15 minutes off, we think it would rank pretty high with site selection folks.
How much could you save a developer if you got it with the county controlling the land deal compared to a privately owned site?
We don't have our land basis figured out yet for this, but I do know that land, like down in Corridor 75, owned by a private developer, is being sold for around $80,000 to $100,000 an acre. You know, assuming we can get everything figured out here on this site, and I think we're going to be substantially less. I mean, we're talking probably, $10,000 to $20,000 an acre.
Is that 10 to 20 loaded with infrastructure costs, or is that anticipation of finding some other way to fund the infrastructure?
It's an anticipation of finding some ways to fund the infrastructure.
The Caterpillar deal may be instructive. It may not. It may be the state of the economy right now, but Caterpillar, and we were involved in that deal, Clayton ended up giving the land to Caterpillar free, zero. It was worth that much to them, and it was worth that much to them in part because Clayton is a city and has an income tax. Mm-hmm. And so they ran the numbers on the income tax, the income stream off the income tax, and made the judgment as a government, that was worth more to them in the long term than giving up the price of the land that they had owned. There was a $1.2 million infrastructure cost for the first phase. It's my understanding Caterpillar is asking for another $900,000 on top of that for an adjacent roadway. You know, when you're running the numbers, I think you have to be considerate of what the long-term gain to the community is and how you offset those upfront costs. We are seeing, the reason that I ask you about land use is because we're starting to see a lot of large logistics and distribution plays along I-70 in particular, much more so than 75, and I'm not sure if that's because the cost of land on 75 is starting to escalate so rapidly between Tip City and Cincinnati that it knocks distribution warehousing out of consideration. I think it's probably more that. But I-70 seems to be developing into the logistics distribution corridor in the region. We had last year a Fortune 25 company approach us about a 1.4 million square foot building that they ended up putting, at least for now, on the back burner. Caterpillar is in excess of 1 million square feet. There's another preliminary site selector out right now for another logistics distribution complex that's just at, I think, 1 million or 1.1 million square feet. And I think they're looking heavily at the I-70 corridor. One of the challenges I think the county is going to have is obviously this, and figuring the numbers out and figuring out what the long-term economic gain is and how you offset the long-term economic gain versus the short-term pain and the cost of ramping this thing up. But it's also how you sell and how you market this property. One of the first questions that almost every site selector asks is about workforce, the availability of workforce and the cost of that workforce and the level of the skill sets of those workers. And then they make a reasonable assumption, given the nature and pay scales of the job, how far people are willing to commute. So when companies start looking at the available workforce, they have the data, they draw a map, they put a pinpoint at their site, and they draw the circle, and then they pull the data in, mm-hmm. And then maybe they draw it a little bigger, and they get to a point where they say, look, if there are $15 an hour jobs, people are not going to commute 60 miles, This isn't the East Coast or the West Coast. B, gas prices are going to go back. Everybody knows they're going to go back. That's going to force a tighter circle. So I mean, I don't know that that's problematic here, but it's something long-term that you need to consider in marketing this property to potential clients is the availability of workforce. Who's here? What's here? How far away are they? How far can you reasonably pull workers to this site to work?
Are training sites available for workers as far as job skills?
Training sites will be important. Training programs will be important. Training grants.
There is now a community college here, extension of St. Clair, and that they would develop programs
yes.
to meet the
yes.
economic needs of the area.
Yes. I mean, some of it will depend upon the specific company and what the company does
sure.
in terms of what the training needs would be and how far afield. What the current client base is, the workers in place, the demographics of those workers and what those skill levels are versus what the company needs. It may be industry certifications, it might be associate's degrees, it might be bachelor's degrees. And Sinclair is going to get you part of the way, depending upon what it is. I mean, an R&D facility, in all likelihood, Sinclair isn't going to be as robust in supplying solutions.
As Miami or
right.
University of Dayton.
Right. Or Wright State or whatever. Yeah. So, in my estimation, just early on, the logistics, you call it industrial distribution, that's a smart play, I think, for this quarter because of the volume of traffic and because of the fact that that seems to be the way the market is emerging just naturally here in the region anyway.
I think another kind of sub-user specifically we've talked about is working with the engineer's office and see what we can do to get fiber out to the site, your call center type mm-hmm. of thing, as well.
One of the advantages that this site has, I know a lot of the more urban sites don't have because of land cost,
mm-hmm.
is the ability to potentially put in trailer parking. Right now we're planning for trailer parking, and there's a lot of sites that get kicked out, I know, just because there's not room for trailer parking. So we're trying to plan that in here. The way that we're looking at this right now, if you kind of look here at this well site line, this more or less is property that we can hopefully acquire here shortly or have rights to, such that you could more or less get about 1.2 to 1.4 million square feet just on this side of this planned road. You can also make the building deeper, but 500 feet is kind of, in my experience, what a desired depth of building is. So I think we could serve a lot of good development off of this one site over here.
How far away is Royal?
5 miles probably to the nearest.
It goes like that.
Okay. That issue will come up.
Yeah.
It won't be a primary issue with every business, but you will run into, especially in the logistics and distribution field, there will be companies that will have to have rail. Some might want to have rail, and others won't care because it'll be all over the road stuff. But just so you know, I mean, the universe of logistics and distribution companies, you're going to shave off a piece because you don't have rail access.
I know it's going to vary from user to user, but is there some inherent advantage of having I-70 frontage versus the rail access? You know, I'm sure in a distributor's world they'd like to have both, but you know, there aren't too many with rail access. I wouldn't imagine an I-70 frontage.
Probably not. And I think it's all about cost for the company.
Mm-hmm.
So they run the numbers just like you guys are going to run the numbers in terms of the volume of stuff that they ship.
Yeah.
If they have high volumes of things that are logistically able to be put on a train, it's a lot cheaper to stick it on a train and ship it somewhere than it is on you know, 86 semi-tractor trailers.
Mm-hmm.
What do those new GE engines get? Some incredible amount, like 280 miles on a gallon of
liquid. This is a radio app. NESX, right?
So, you know, for them, it's all a function of cost.
Mm-hmm.
And if they ship a lot of rail stuff, you know, they've already done the numbers and they figured out that it's cheaper and they need rail. And I don't know what that percentage is, but I know we see it from time to time with the big industrial users that have to have rail. And so they're going to be probably closer to urban areas where rail access is more readily available. But it's just something to keep in the back of your mind, especially for the county as you look out forward in terms of available sites that could potentially be plays, that rail is important for some of those people.
Talking about the differentiators of this site, at least from my experience, which I think is exciting and a little bit different, is that obviously from a funding perspective, we're going to be going for every pot of money we can for the infrastructure and even acquisition on some of those programs of property. What I find unique about working with this group is that typically getting that local match is like pulling teeth or, you know we just don't have it. I think, you know, as we're starting to solidify our funding strategy right now, it's looking like there's 2, 3, or 4 actual, you know, cash sources to where we can, you know, leverage some of this, whether it's CDBG, whether it's conveyance tax, etc. Looks like we have a little bit of match to work with. Obviously, we're going to play the game of trying to use one program to count as a local match for the other, but at some point I know we're going to have to dip into, you know, some of those match sources locally. So, I mean, that is encouraging that, you know, I don't think we'll be scraping from that right yet, at least for the phase one or so. Issue two, we're obviously looking out at for this next round. Our water and sewer guy, he's not here today, but he's a funding expert on that, and we seem to be drifting towards, no pun intended, but issue two for the water and sewer on that. All this work out here, we're putting in for a JRS, obviously, here for April. Probably going for the light intensity designation.